You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Millions of people in the United States provide care for someone who's ill, disabled, or too elderly to care for themselves. In 2012, almost 30% of the U.S. population could be counted on as an informal caregiver. Many times, caregivers are family members, sons or daughters, or siblings.
After months of caregiving, one problem that could cause a lot of personal, emotional, and physical distress is compassion fatigue. That's a term that refers to a breakdown of empathy. It can lead to physical pain, maybe even irresponsible decision-making.
Patricia Smith joins us now. She's the founder of the Compassion Fatigue Awareness Project and Healthy Caregiving LLC. Patricia, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here today.
Well, first off, how do you define compassion fatigue?
Well, compassion fatigue is something that I believe a lot of people just think you're tired of giving. And oftentimes you'll go to your physician or you'll go to even a mental health worker and they'll say, you know, take a week off and go to Hawaii. Well, that's a misnomer. That's just not what it is. Dr. Charles Figley, who's a professor at Tulane Traumatology Institute, coined the phrase back in 1995, and these are his exact words. Compassion fatigue is a state experienced by those helping people in distress. It is an extreme state of tension and preoccupation with the suffering of those being helped to the degree that it can create a secondary traumatic stress for the helper. So it's actually a secondary traumatic stress. It's not just that you're tired. You are actually being stressed emotionally, physically, psychologically by the work you're doing.
So a lot of people might think that they are tired, that that vacation to Hawaii is going to help fix the problem. So what are some of the common symptoms of compassion fatigue so that people can start to recognize it in themselves?
Okay. Some of the symptoms are isolation. It's all just too much, so you tend to isolate yourself. You go, you know, in the workplace, perhaps if you're a manager or director, you go in your office and you shut the door, which, of course, is the worst thing possible. You need to be available for your people. Emotional outbursts, and that comes from years and years of just pushing down emotions, you know, just pushing it down and pushing it down. I can handle this. I can do it. I can make it happen. I can do better. I can do more. So one day it just all comes out with a vengeance. Another one is sadness and apathy. You just have this veil of sadness over you all the time. Impulse to rescue anyone in need. We see this a lot with animal caregivers who suffer from very high levels of compassion fatigue because of the work they do every day. You see persistent physical ailments that never go away. You know, it's the person with the headache, the sinus infection that never clears up, the sore throat, the backache, the gastrointestinal. You know, the thing that's just always there, and you go to the doctor and say, I've got this going on, and it's very real to you as the compassion fatigue sufferer, but there's no cause that the doctor can really find because it's all something that's psychological, and the body finally calls out and says, stop, and that's how it does it with physical pain. Substance abuse, and that would be self-medicating with alcohol, tobacco, pornography, particularly with, you know, computers. It's a way of self-medicating to get away from things, and it's an unhealthy way to get away from it. There are many healthy ways you can help yourself. Hypervigilance, hyperarousal, you know, someone shuts a door, slams a door, and you jump 3 feet off your chair. And then one of the ones that really tells you that you probably need some help from a mental health professional is recurring nightmares or flashbacks of incidences that you've experienced.
And what about any change in attitude toward the person who's being cared for? Is that something that we see in terms of what we might typically think of as compassion fatigue?
Of course. And that's because they become the object of your anger, of your frustration, of your stress. And that's where I think a lot of the elder abuse comes in. You know, people, elderly people in assisted living or dementia or memory facilities, you know, don't have all of their faculties to work with. And it's very easy to become very agitated working with someone who you have to repeat it 5 or 6 times, or they can't hear, or they don't understand what you're saying. So, you know, an emotional outburst could come in the way of, you know, maybe doing something that would be considered elder abuse. Or working with children as well. You know, child advocates can suffer from this. Social workers, anyone who works with someone. Law enforcement, which I think maybe we're seeing now some of that. I think there's a lot of very high levels of compassion fatigue in our law enforcement system. And it's coming out where they're fearful and they maybe move too quickly, you know, to make a decision that doesn't take, you know, the time to really look at it and make a really good, solid decision.
Do we know when compassion fatigue is most likely to set in?
It can be any time. It's cumulative. And, you know, one of the causes is a history of unresolved childhood trauma. You have things happen as a child, and you don't ever put it to rest. And so it just grows and grows and grows. So someone who may be, you know, newly out of college and a social worker, and she's just so excited about doing what she's always wanted to do, and within a month the symptoms could surface, or she could go for years and continue to be able to stuff it down. But at some point, it will definitely surface.
Now, I read recently in an article about compassion fatigue that 3 months is about the window that most families can handle caregiving or a crisis that requires caregiving. And sometimes these days, you know, caregiving can be a marathon. It can last not 3 months, but it can last 3 years, 4 years, five years.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
part of the issue here?
Well, of course. And it's a roller coaster ride, and I can attest to that because I'm helping care for my 94-year-old mother, and it's gone on for over a year. And luckily, I have great family support, you know, a sister that we work together and a brother who does all the financial. And, I mean, we've got it worked out really well, but some don't have that. You know, some are the only sibling and have to deal with this. And the thing is, it changes constantly. And if you're not really good about change and you don't adapt quickly and you're very, very flexible, the levels of stress can just skyrocket, and that's because it goes on, and you have to deal. Well, you have to navigate the health system, basically, and that's not an easy thing to do these days.
We're talking right now with Patricia Smith, the founder of the Compassion Fatigue Awareness Project, about what compassion fatigue is and what we can do about it. And Patricia, you're out there trying to draw awareness to this. Can you tell us a story about someone you've worked with that sort of gets at the big picture of what it's like to experience compassion fatigue?
People I work with when I do my presentations, and I mean, for the last 15 years, I've been doing this work, and I've worked with law enforcement officials, chaplains, psychologists, mental health workers, healthcare workers, social workers, animal welfare. I mean, it is across what I call across the curriculum. It's happening everywhere, and it's very intense with family caregivers because you've got that additional emotional tie to the person, and there might be unresolved issues that were brought into the caregiving arena, and oftentimes you see that. There's all kinds of stories. I mean, you know, from every single, you know, area of caregiving. The animal welfare workers are very interesting in what often happens with them because they want to rescue, and they're very idealistic. You know, they want to rescue every animal. You'll get someone who, you know, she'll raise her hand in a presentation, and she'll say, you know, I have 4 dogs and 3 cats and a couple of guinea pigs and a garter snake, and it's taking all of, you know, my money every month, and I live in a one-bedroom apartment, and I don't know what to do. They kind of work themselves into a hole, and then they go down, they spiral down, down, down. And if they don't do something, it can really, really devastate your life as a caregiver. You have to have very strong personal boundaries to be a healthy caregiver.
So how do you begin to come back from this, assuming that you put all the puzzle pieces together and you say, hey, it looks like I might be someone who's suffering from compassion fatigue? What are some of the steps you could take to heal it?
Well, the main thing for individuals is to practice what I call authentic, sustainable self-care daily. Like I said, the trip to Hawaii is a wonderful thing. It'll fill you up and you'll come back, you know, invigorated. But if you don't continue to take care of yourself, you'll spiral back down. So authentic means self-care that's authentic to you. You know, a friend says, you know, I run every day and I feel great. And I think if you do that, you'll feel great too. And you run to the end of the block and you realize you absolutely hate it because it's not authentic to you. And, you know, we're in a society where Madison Avenue is telling us what to wear, how to look, what car to drive, what job to have, what school to go to. You have to find out what's authentic to you. And it has to be something sustainable that you continue to do year after year so you can continue doing the work that you want to do. Of course, the other thing is you practice standards of self-care, which is good nutrition, good rest, healthy relationships. You know, try to get away from dysfunctional relationships. They take all of your energy. You want to practice standards that show that self-care will bring you to wellness. You need to integrate time for yourself, work, and your relationships, which isn't easy. Latest study shows that the two main things to remain a healthy caregiver is to build a healthy support system and to find some sort of spirituality. And they're not talking about a religion, an organized religion. And indeed, if that works for you, that's fine. But what they're talking about is some sort of spirituality where there's an interconnectedness. For me, it's being around animals, being where there's water, walking in nature. That's how I build myself up, because healthy caregiving is build up, empty out, build up, empty out. And that has to go on continually all day long, because that's what goes on in the workplace or with your family caregiving. So you need to do those things.
We're talking right now about what to do when you're experiencing compassion fatigue as a caregiver. Maybe you're caring for a family member or a friend. Well, Patricia Smith is with us now. She's the founder of the Compassion Fatigue Awareness Project.
And you can join in. Are we telling your story here? Do you provide care from someone, either someone in your family or as part of your job? Have you ever experienced what our guest is talking about, something that felt like this kind of compassion fatigue, or seen it in someone else? How do you deal with it? How do you move beyond it? How do you heal from it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking about compassion fatigue now, and what to do when it's something that you're experiencing, how to deal with it, recognize it, and how to hopefully come back from it and replenish yourself. We're talking with Patricia Smith, the founder of the Compassion Fatigue Awareness Project.
And we want to hear from you, your questions, and maybe your experiences. If you're providing care for someone in your family, or you do this as a volunteer, or as your job, have you experienced compassion fatigue? How do you deal with it? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go to our callers now. Sherry joins us first from Green Bay. Hi, Sherry.
Hello.
What did you want to share?
Yeah, I was just listening to the show, and I thought it was very interesting. I'm a foster parent, and it seems like when I hit that three-month mark after a child arrives, I go through kind of that foster fatigue, and I try to make sure that I can build a strong support network, and I've got somebody that can help me try to get past that three-month bump with each of the kids that I've had.
So
that's excellent.
You've experienced
a solid support
months.
System is the best thing you can do.
And Sherry, did it take you a while to figure that out and to figure out how to replenish yourself?
It did, actually. I'm on my third foster child, and I found it interesting that for each one of them, it was kind of that three-month mark, and I just have to keep trying to find other people. And I really wish that would have been part of the training when we went through foster parent training, because it's just interesting that is what I've experienced.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Sherry, and I appreciate the work that you're doing, too, with your family. And Patricia, what about that, the support network? How do you build it when you're in the middle of the challenge of the caregiving? How do you take the time to reach out to people and hopefully accept them reaching out to you?
Well, that's one of the things that's difficult, is because usually people who are at risk for compassion fatigue are doers. You know, we have a very, very hard time saying no. We say yes to everything, and oftentimes we're very frazzled because we're trying to manage everything around us. And you have to simply take the time to figure it out. And you want to find someone who is what Dr. Judith Orloff calls, you don't want an emotional vampire. And they have a way of attaching to people that are caring and giving and empathetic and have compassion. And what they will do is that they will dump everything on you, and they'll walk away full, and you're totally depleted because you've once again listened to stories that might be traumatizing. So what you want to do is try to figure out, you know, who in your life fills you up? Who do you laugh with? Who do you have a good time with? Who do you, you know, go have a cup of coffee with, and you just talk and fill each other up? When you walk away, you feel really good about yourself, and you can't wait until you see that person, you know, again. You've got to be able to identify those people. And the thing that I found out that was very interesting when I worked in animal welfare work, I was so idealistic. I'd been in college textbook publishing for many, many years and wrote for the San Jose Mercury News because my background is actually journalism. And I wanted to do something different, and I wanted to care for animals. Well, little did I know that the underbelly of animal caregiving is very, very difficult. And I wanted to share it with my family, and my family were all very, very close. They didn't want to hear the stories of hoarding and abuse and, you know, I'd go home and nobody wanted to hear my stories. And at first it was very hurtful because I thought, you know, they've always been there for me. I've always been there for them. But then once I understood what was going on and I learned more and more about compassion fatigue, which is where I first learned about it in animal welfare work, I realized that it wasn't fair to them. My stories were traumatizing them, and they were re-traumatizing me. So basically, colleagues, you know, because they're experiencing the same thing. As long as you build each other up and you don't keep going to that place of trauma. And the other thing I wanted to mention, volunteers, because in the break they mentioned, you know, if you volunteer, volunteers will often bring, they're already compassion fatigued, and they will bring it to the environment. And so having educational workshops for volunteers as part of their training is an excellent idea. So they're aware of it and they don't contribute to it, because it can really create a very dysfunctional organization when the staff are suffering from compassion fatigue and then the volunteers bring it in from the outside.
Let's go back to our callers now. We've got Boris joining us next in Madison. Hi, Boris.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I called in because it was this rather serendipitous moment I just experienced. I got into my car from a care center parking lot to drive home after taking care of my grandmother, who recently suffered a major stroke. And I turned on the radio, and here was this show that I almost couldn't believe it, right? Because it's something that I'm now beginning to internalize and understand and experience personally.
That's an amazing story, Boris. Oh, my goodness, I've got goosebumps. Yeah. That happens so often. I'm so glad you've tuned in because, you know, to know about this before you get too involved with the caregiving, which you will, of course you will. It's your grandmother, you love her, you want to care for her, but you need to care for yourself first so you have something to give her.
And any advice for Boris as he just starts out on this journey?
Get help. Either, you know, if you have other siblings or you have neighbors or relatives who are willing to help, and set up schedules, you know, go on an Excel sheet and set up schedules. Make sure you schedule time for yourself, things that fill you up. Then you have stories to bring to your grandmother, you know, to share with her, and it makes a much more fulfilling relationship as her health declines. Take good care of yourself, get rest, eat well, exercise, all of the things we hear all the time, but you have to do it. You absolutely have to remain healthy.
Well, thank you so much, and I wish you well with your grandmother.
Oh, me too, Boris.
I appreciate
good luck.
That. Let's try to get one more quick call in. Katie joins us next in Hayward. Katie, hi.
Hi. I kind of have a different type of perspective in terms of caregiving. I'm a teacher. I've been teaching for about 7 years now, and one of the things that I'm finding as caregiver fatigue is that I expend a lot of my caregiving energy throughout the day and my place of employment, and then when I get home, it winds up being sapped of that energy for my own children at home. Some of the remedies I was given and advice I was given really, really early on when I was working in early childhood care was that it was really important to try not to be in a classroom where the kids were the same age as my own children, because when you get back home, then at least it's a different type of energy you need to expend. So when I had babies, it was really advised, well, try not to be in the baby room. Try, if you can, to be in the 3-year-old room or something, so that when you get home, you can really appreciate spending time with your kids.
Interesting, Katie. Thank you for that. And Patricia, compassion fatigue for teachers. How do you handle giving to kids during the day and then your own children at night?
Right, and you're very astute to have made that correlation. That's just, I just had an aha moment when you were talking. Teachers are definitely suffering from high levels of compassion fatigue, particularly in our high schools where so many things are happening. One of the things that I know social workers particularly, and I love working with young social workers because they're so idealistic and they just want to do so well, you know, with their people. One told me a story once, and she said, you know, she had the same issue. She does her work all day, and then at night she drives in, and her husband's car there, so she knows inside the house is her husband and her 3 little children, and somehow she has to make that transition. So even though she's feeling rather depleted, she has to fill up somehow in order to go in there and be there and be present and mindful for her family.
And in our last 30 seconds, what would you
advise? Okay, well, what she does is she drives in, she gets out of her car, she goes over to the side of the house where there's a garbage can, she lifts the garbage lid, and she psychologically dumps the day in the garbage can. She puts the lid on, and she goes in, and she's there for her family. It's a letting go ritual, and I highly recommend that to anyone who has to transition throughout the day.
Well,
and it works.
Patricia, lots of wonderful advice there. We appreciate that, and thank you so much for joining us today and sharing with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
We've been speaking with Patricia Smith. She's the founder of the Compassion Fatigue Awareness Project and Healthy Caregiving LLC. And you can read more about this over on the Central Time Facebook page, and also leave a comment of your own there as well.